Faith is not as hardy as a weed, it is indeed more like a hothouse plant. It must be pampered, must be fed, must be looked after. To obtain faith we must repeat, and repeat, and repeat our affirmation of faith so that the knowledge of it is driven into our subconscious. This subconscious is 9/10 of us, that is, by far the greater part of us. We often liken it unto a lazy old man who just does not want to be disturbed. The old man is reading his newspapers, perhaps he has his pipe in his mouth and his feet are encased in comfortable slippers. He is really tired of all the racket, all the noise, all the distraction constantly going on around him. Through years of experience he has learned to shield himself from all except the most insistent interruptions and distractions. Like an old man who is partly deaf, he doesn't hear when he is called the first time. The second time he is called he doesn't hear because he doesn't want to hear, because he thinks it might be work for him, or some interruption of his lazy leisure. The third time he starts to get irritable because the caller is disturbing his trend of thoughts while he is perhaps more anxious to read the racing results than to do anything which requires effort. Keep on and on repeating your faith and then the old man will come to life with a jerk, and when the knowledge is implanted in your 127 subconscious then you will have automatic faith. We must make it clear here that faith is not belief. You can say I believe that tomorrow is Monday, and that means a certain thing. You would not say I have faith that tomorrow is Monday because that would mean a completely different thing. Faith is something which usually grows up with us. We become a Christian, or a Buddhist, or a Jew because, usually, our parents were Christians, Buddhists, or Jews. We have faith in our parents, we believe that what our parents believed was correct, and so our faith became the same as our parents. Certain things which cannot definitely be proved while upon the earth require faith, other things which can be proved can be believed or disbelieved. There is a distinction, and one should become aware of that distinction. But, first of all, what do you want to believe? What is it that requires your faith? Decide what it is that needs faith, think of it from all angles. Is it faith in a religion, faith in an ability? Think of it from as many angles as you can, and then, making sure that you think of it in a positive way, affirm, state, to yourself that you can do this or that, or that you will do this or that, or that you firmly believe in this or that. You must keep on affirming it. Unless you do so affirm you will never have faith. Great religions have faithful followers. Those faithful followers are ones who have been to church, or chapel, or synagogue, or temple, and by repeated prayers, not merely on their own behalf but by others also, their subconscious has become aware that there are some things which must be a faith. In the Far East there are such things as mantras. A person will say a certain thing, a mantra, and say it again, and repeat it time after time. Possibly the person will not even know what the mantra is about. That does not matter because the founders of the religion who compose the mantra will have arranged it in such a way that the vibrations engendered in repeating the mantra knock into the subconscious the thing desired. Soon, even though the person does not fully understand the mantra, it becomes part of the person's subconscious, and the faith then is purely automatic. In much the same way, if you repeat prayers time after time you begin to believe them. It is all a matter of getting your subconscious to understand and to cooperate, and once you have faith then you do not have to bother anymore because your 128 subconscious will always remind you that you have this faith, and that you can do those certain things. Repeat to yourself time after time that you are going to see an aura, that you are going to be telepathic, that you are going to do this or that, whatever it is that you particularly want to do. Then in time you will do this. All successful men, all those who become millionaires or inventors are people who have faith in themselves. They have faith that they can do what they set out to do, because believing in themselves first, believing in their own powers and abilities, they then generated the faith which made that belief come true. If you keep on telling yourself that you are going to succeed, you will succeed, but you will only succeed if you keep on with your affirmation of success and not let doubt, the negative of faith, intrude. Try this affirmation of success, and the results will truly astonish you. You may have heard of people who can tell another person what they were in a past life, what they were doing. That comes from the Akashic record, for many people in their sleep travel into the astral and see the Akashic record. When they return in the morning, as we have already discussed, they may bring back a distorted memory, so while some of the things they say are true, others are distortions. You will find that most of the things you hear about relate to suffering. People seem to have been torturers, seem to have been all sorts of things, mainly bad. That is because we come to this earth, as to a school, we have to remember at all times that people have to have hardship to purge them of their faults, in much the same way that ore is placed in a furnace and subjected to intense heat so that the dross or wastage rises to the surface where it can be skimmed off and discarded. Humans have to undergo stresses which drive them almost, but not quite, to the breaking point so that their spirituality may be tested, and their faults may be eradicated. People come to this earth to learn things, and people learn much more quickly and more permanently by hardship than by kindness. This is a world of hardship, it is a training school which is almost reformatory, and although there are rare kindnesses which shine out like the beam of a beacon light on a dark night, much of the world is strife. Look at the history of nations if you dispute this, look at all the 129 incipient wars. It is indeed a world of impurity, and it makes it difficult for higher entities to come here as they must in order to supervise what is going on. It is a fact that a higher entity coming to this earth must take up some impurity which will act almost as an anchor, and keep them in contact with the earth. The high entity who comes here cannot come in his own pure, unsullied form, because he could not stand the sorrows and the trials of the earth. So, be careful when you think that such and such a person cannot be so high as some people say because he is too fond of this or too fond of that. As long as he does not drink, then he might be quite high. Drink, though, cancels out all high abilities. Many of the greatest clairvoyants and telepaths have some physical affliction because suffering can often increase the rate of vibration and confer telepathy or clairvoyance upon the sufferer. You cannot know of a person's spirituality by just looking at him. Do not judge a person to be an evil person because he is sick. The sickness may have been taken on deliberately in order that the person can increase his or her rate of vibration for a special task. Do not judge a person harshly because he or she uses a swear word, or does not altogether act as you think that a great person should act. It may indeed be a great person who is using swear words or some other vice in order to have an anchor to enable him or her to remain upon the earth. Again, provided that the person does not engage in drink, the person may quite definitely be the higher entity which you originally thought him to be. There is much impurity on earth, and all that is impure decays, only the pure and the incorruptible lives on. That is one of the reasons why we come to earth. In the spirit world beyond the astral you cannot have corruption. You cannot have evil on the higher planes, so people come to earth to learn the hard way. And again, a great entity coming to earth will take a vice or an affliction, knowing that as he or she came for a special task, that affliction or vice will not be held as karma, we shall deal with that later, but instead be regarded as a tool, as an anchor, which passes away as corruption along with the physical body. There is a further point which we are going to make, and it is this: great reformers in this life are sometimes those who in a previous life were great offenders in a line in which he or she now reforms. Hitler, undoubtedly will come back as a great reformer. Many of the people, 130, from the Spanish Inquisition have come back as great reformers. It is a thought worth thinking of. Remember, the middle way is the way in which to live. Do not be so bad that you have to suffer for it later, and if you are so pure, so holy that everyone is beneath you, then you cannot stay on this earth. Fortunately, however, no one is that pure. Lesson 20. Soon we hope to deal with telepathy, clairvoyance, and psychometry. But first of all you must permit us a digression, permit us to deal with another subject. We are quite aware that you are thinking by now that we wander off the subject. But that is deliberate, we know what we have in mind, And often it pays you for us to draw your attention to a subject and then go on to something else which is so very necessary by way of a foundation. We will make it clear now that people who want to be clairvoyant, who want to be telepathic and to have psychometric abilities will have to proceed slowly. You cannot force development beyond a certain limit. If you will consider the world of nature, you will find that exotic orchids are indeed hothouse plants, and if they have been forced in their development, then they are very fragile blooms indeed. The same applies to everything the growth of which has to be stimulated artificially, or which has its growth forced. Hothouse plants are not hardy, they are not reliable, they fall prey to all sorts of remarkable ailments. We want you to have a very healthy dose of telepathy, we want you to be able to see into the past by clairvoyance, and we want you to be in such a position that you can pick up a stone, for instance, from the seashore and tell what has happened to that stone throughout the years. It is possible, you know, for a really good psychometrist to pick up an article on the seashore where it has not been touched by man, and to visualize quite clearly the time when that fragment of stone was perhaps embodied in a mountain. This is not exaggeration, it is very ordinary, very easy, when one knows how. Let us, then, lay a good foundation. Because one cannot build a house on shifting sands and expect the house to last for very long. In dealing with our foundations, let us state first that inner 131, composure and tranquility are two of the cornerstones of our foundation, for unless one has inner composure, one will not have much success at telepathy or clairvoyance. Inner composure is a very definite must if one is going to progress beyond the most elementary, primary stages. Humans are indeed a mass of conflicting emotions. One looks about and finds people hurrying about in the street, dashing about in cars, or rushing off to catch a bus. Then there is the last-minute dash to the shops to lay in supplies possibly before the shops close for the weekend. We are always in a jangled state, we seethe and boil, and our brains send off sparks of rage and frustration. Often we will find ourselves growing hot. We will find that we are under tension, that we have queer pressures within us. At such times we feel that we could explode. Yes, you might almost do that. But it will not help one at all in the field of esoteric research if one has such uncontrolled brain waves that one blanks out the incoming signals. The signals are coming in all the time from everywhere, from everyone, and if we will open our minds we will pick up and comprehend those signals. Have you ever tried to listen to radio during a thunderstorm? Have you ever tried to watch some television program while some idiot was parked just outside your window and you were getting his car ignition as zigzag flashes through the screen? Perhaps you have attempted listening to a far distant station over the howl and crackle of static generated by an electric storm. It is not easy. Some of us are interested in shortwave reception and listen into the whole world, listen to the news from different countries, listen to music from various continents. If you have done much in shortwave work and have listened to far-off places, you will know how very difficult it is at times to pick up speech because of all the interference caused by static, both man-made and natural. Car ignition noises, the clicking on and off of the thermostat in the refrigerator. Or perhaps someone is playing about with the doorbell just when we want to listen. We get hotter and hotter under the collar as we try to concentrate and pick up the message from the radio. Until we can get clear of some of that static in our own mind, we are going to have difficulty with telepathy, for the noise a human brain churns out is far worse than even that from the most 132 battered old car. You may think this is exaggeration, but as your powers increase in this direction you will find that we have rather understated the matter. Let us develop this theme a little further, because we must be quite sure of what we are doing before we do it. We must be quite sure of the obstacles in our path, because until we know the obstacles we cannot overcome them. Let us consider it from a different angle. It is a fairly easy matter to telephone from one continent to another, provided that there be a suitable cable laid beneath the ocean. The telephone line from, let us say, England to New York, or to Adelaide from England, is a case in point. Using these telephone lines under the water, one still gets garbled patches of speech. At times, also there will be fading, but on the whole we can understand quite well what is being said. Unfortunately, much of the world is not connected by telephone cables. In certain areas, such as between Montreal and Buenos Aires, there are not telephone cables but abominable things called radio links. These horrendous contraptions should never, never be dignified by the name telephone, because using them appears to us to be a feat of endurance. Speech is frequently garbled beyond recognition, speech is chopped up, high frequencies are cut off and low frequencies are cut off, and so instead of getting a human tone of voice which we can comprehend, we get a flat monotone which could have been spewed out without inflection by some robot. One strains and strains to make out what is being said, but all the time there is a further grave disadvantage: one has to keep talking all the time, even if one has nothing to say, in order to keep the circuit open. Added to that, there is the static, which we have already mentioned, but there are various refractions and reflections from the different ionized layers around the Earth. We mention this to show that even with the best equipment on Earth, speech by radio telephone is a matter of hit or miss, and in our experience it is more often miss than hit. We personally find telepathy to be far, far easier than a radio telephone. You may wonder why we keep on writing about radio and electronics and electricity. The answer is because the brain and the body generate electricity. The brain and all the muscles send out pulsing electrons, which are, in fact, the radio program of the human body. Much of the 133 behavior of the human body, and much of the phenomena of clairvoyance, telepathy, psychometry, and all the rest of it can be so easily understood by reference to the science of radio and electronics. We are trying to make this easy for you, so we are going to ask you to very carefully consider all this matter about electronics and about radio. It does mean much to you if you study electronics. The more you study radio and electronics, the more easily will you progress in your development. Delicate instruments need to be protected from shock. You would not expect to have an expensive television receiver and bang it about. You would not expect to have an expensive watch and keep banging it against the wall. We have the most expensive receivers of all, our brain, and if we are going to use that receiver to the best effect, we must protect it from shock. If we are going to let ourselves become agitated or frustrated, then we are going to generate a type of wave within us which will inhibit reception of waves without. In telepathy, we have to keep as calm as possible, otherwise we are going to be wasting our time in making any attempt whatever at receiving the thoughts of others. The first time we shall not get much result in telepathy. So, let us concentrate on composure. Whenever we think, we generate electricity. If we think calmly and without any strong emotion, then our brain electricity will follow a fairly smooth frequency without high peaks, and without low valleys. If we have a high peak, it means that something is interrupting the even tenor of our thoughts. We must be sure that there are no excessive voltages generated, and nothing which could cause alarm and despondency must be permitted within our thinking processes. We must at all times cultivate inner composure, cultivate a tranquil manner. No doubt it is annoying if one is hanging out the washing and the telephone rings when one just has one's hands full of wet, soggy clothes. No doubt it is frightfully irritating when one misses the special bargain for the week at the local store, but all these things are very mundane. They do not help us at all when we leave this world. When we do terminate our stay upon Earth, it will not matter greatly, if at all, whether we have dealt with the great supermarkets or with the little man in the corner store. Let us repeat again, in case you haven't read, 134, it before, that we cannot take a single penny away with us to the next life, but we can and do take away all the knowledge that we have gained, for the distilled essence of all that we learn upon Earth is that which makes us what we are going to be in the next life. Therefore, let us concentrate on knowledge, on the things which we can take away. At present the world has gone money mad, possession mad. Countries such as Canada and the United States of America are living under a false standard of prosperity. Everyone seems to be in debt, everyone is borrowing from the finance companies, alias of the old-fashioned money lender, now done up with chromium plate. People want new cars, each one flashier than the one of the year before. People dash about, They have no time for the serious things of life, they're chasing the things that do not matter. The only things that matter are the things we learn. We take away with us all the knowledge that we acquired during our stay on Earth. We leave behind us, if we have any, money and possessions for someone else to squander. Wherefore it behoves us to concentrate on the things which will be truly ours, knowledge. One of the easiest ways of acquiring tranquility is by breathing in a regular pattern. Most people, unfortunately, breathe in a manner which could be termed suck blow, suck blow. They pant along, really starving the brain of oxygen. People seem to think that air is rationed. They have to gulp it in and puff it out. They seem to think the air they take in is hot, or something, for no sooner is it in than they are anxious to get rid of it and get the next load. We should learn to breathe slowly and deeply. We should make sure that all the stale air is removed from our lungs. If we breathe with only the top of our lungs, that air which is at the bottom becomes staler and staler. The better our air supply is, the better our brain power will be, for we cannot live without oxygen and the brain is the first thing to be starved of oxygen. If our brain is deprived of the minimum amount of oxygen, we feel tired, sleepy, we become slow in our motion, and we find it difficult to think. Sometimes, too, we find that we get a bad headache. Then we go out into the fresh air, which cures the headache, and also proves that one does need plenty of oxygen. A regular breathing pattern soothes ruffled emotions. If you are feeling thoroughly bad-tempered, out of sorts, and really would, 135, like to do violence to someone, take a deep breath instead, the deepest breath you can manage, and hold it for a few seconds. Then let it out slowly over a few seconds. Do that a few times, and you will find that you calm down more quickly than you thought possible. Do not just suck in breath as fast as you can, and then blow it out as fast as you can. Draw in the breath slowly, steadily, and think, as is truly the case, that you are inhaling life and vitality itself. Let us give an illustration. Compress your chest, and try to expel as much air as you possibly can. Force your lungs in so that, if you wish, your tongue is hanging out from the lack of air. Then, over some 10 seconds of time, completely fill your lungs, throw out your chest, take in as much air as you can, and then cram in a little more. When you have got in as much air as you possibly can, hold it for 5 seconds, and after that 5 seconds slowly let out the air, so slowly that you take 7 seconds to get rid of the air within you. Exhale completely. Force your muscles inwards to squeeze out as much air as you can. Then start all over again. It might be a good idea if you do this half a dozen times, and you will find that your frustrations and your bad mood has gone. You will feel better inside too. You will find that you are beginning to get inner composure. If you are going for an interview which really matters, before you actually go into the interview room, take some deep breaths. You will find that your racing pulse will race no more, it will steady down. You will find that you are more confident, have less to worry about, and if you do this, your interviewer will be impressed with your obvious appearance of confidence. Try it. There are a shocking number of frustrations and irritations in everyday life, and these things are very harmful indeed. Civilization is quite the opposite of that. The more one gets tied up with the trammels of civilization, the more difficult it is to get peace. The man or woman in the heart of a great city is often more irritable, more nervous, than the man or woman in the heart of the countryside. So it becomes more and more necessary to gain some control over one's emotions. People who are frustrated and irritable find that their gastric juices become more and more concentrated. These juices are, of course, acids, and as they become more and more concentrated, they boil up within us, and, 136, eventually reach such a degree of concentration that the inner protective lining of our stomach or other organs cannot resist the attacks of the strong acid. Possibly some part of our inner lining is thinner than the rest. Possibly we have some small blemish inside. Some hard piece of food which we have swallowed may have caused slight irritation in the stomach. Then the acid has a place at which it can work. It works and works on that thinner place, or irritated spot, and in time it penetrates the protective layer within us. The result is a gastric ulcer which leads us to considerable despondency and pain. As you have probably heard, gastric ulcers are known as the complaint of the irritable and nervous. Let us think about all these irritations. You may be wondering where to get the money to pay the gas bill, or why the electric meter man is fussing around your door when you are busy with something else. You may wonder why do so many silly people send you stupid circulars through the mail? Why should you throw them away? Why not let the sender destroy them first and save you the trouble? Well, take it easy, think to yourself, ask yourself this question: will all this matter in 50 or 100 years' time? Whenever you get frustrated, whenever you get almost overcome with the press of ordinary, everyday living, whenever you think that you are going to be submerged in your troubles and your difficulties, think about it again. Think, will any of these matters, any of these worries, be important in 50 or 100 years' time? This age of civilization, so called, is a very trying age indeed. Everything conspires to make us build up unnatural brain waves, conspires to make strange voltages generate within our brain cells. Normally, when one thinks, there is a fairly rhythmical pattern of brain waves which doctors can chart with special instruments. If the brain waves follow a certain pattern, then we are stated to have some mental affliction, so that when a person has a mental sickness, probably the first thing that is done is to chart the brain waves to see how they diverge from the normal. It is a fact known to Easterners that if a person can subdue the abnormal brain waves, then sanity returns. In the Far East, there are various methods used by medical priests whereby the distressed person, the person who has a mental affliction, can be assisted in restoring his brain waves to normalcy. 137. Women, particularly at the change of life, are subject to the generation of a different waveform within the brain. This, of course, is because at the change of life various secretions are shut off or diverted to other channels, and usually the woman in question has been listening to so many old wives' tales that she really does think she is going to be in for a bad time, and because she firmly believes she is going to have difficulties, she does. There is no need for any difficulties at the change of life provided a person is properly prepared. The more unfortunate cases are those women who have had an operation termed hysterectomy. Hysterectomy is an operation whereby the menopause is brought on forcibly by surgical means. Admittedly, that is a secondary reason. The operation is usually for some specific purpose like disease, but the end result is the same. A woman has an operation, hysterectomy, and the sudden termination of the former way of living and the sudden diversion of essential hormones, etc., causes a severe electrical storm in the brain which, for a time, may make the woman even unstable. Suitable treatment and sympathetic understanding really can cure such an unfortunate sufferer. We mention this merely to indicate that the body is an electric generator, and it is so very essential to keep that generator with a constant output, because if we have constant output we may be said to have composure and tranquility, but if the output is upset and varies through worry or certain operations, then tranquility is temporarily lost. But it can definitely be regained. Let us get back, though, to our 50 or 100 years' time. If you do good to a person, then that is something that will matter in 50 to 100 years' time, because if you do good you brighten some person's outlook, just as if you do harm to a person then you depress their outlook. The more good you can do to others, the more you can gain yourself. It is a law of the occult that you cannot receive until you are willing to give first. If you give, be it service or money or love, then you in your turn will get service or money or love, and no matter what one gives, no matter what one receives, everything has to be paid for in time. If you receive a kindness you have to give a kindness, but that is not to be dealt with in this lesson as we will refer to it in more detail when we deal with karma. Be sure to keep yourself calm, be sure to let yourself become, 138, tranquil. Let yourself realize that all these petty restrictions, all these asinine interruptions when we are trying to think or trying to do something will not matter in a few years' time. They are pinpricks, petty irritations, and they should be relegated to their correct status as annoyances and nothing more. Inner composure, peace and tranquility are there for you if you will accept them. All you have to do is to breathe so that your brain gets the maximum oxygen and think that all these silly little irritations will not matter in half a century's time. Then you will see how unimportant they are.